When local government discovered farmer Martha Bonita selling vegetables, carving pumpkins, and hosting birthday parties at her farm, its agents tried to shut her down with a threat of a $15,000 a day fine. This act of government against a small farmer leads us to ask, does big government want small farms?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 974th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there along the Côte d'Azur who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Aaron Shore on the board. Aaron, I have a question for you.
I have an answer.
Good. Do you think big government wants small farms?
Absolutely not.
Folks, Martha Bonita is a farmer who obviously takes joy in getting down to business on her 64-acre Virginia farm. However, when government officials discovered Martha getting down to business selling vegetables and carving pumpkins and hosting birthday parties on her farm, they tried to shut her down with the threat of a $15,000 a day fine. This attempt by government to restrict the ability of a small farmer to survive struck a nerve in Virginians of all political stripes, and farmer Martha Bonita soon found herself the head of a full-scale pitchfork rebellion against government intrusion into family farming. After two runs at the Virginia General Assembly, this pitchfork rebellion succeeded in bringing home the Bonita Bill, which protects the customary activities of farms from government in absence of substantial impacts on public welfare. I guess that would mean no making methadone or stuff like that. Though Martha's pitchfork rebellion succeeded in forcing government agents to scurry for their cubicles, it did leave some very interesting questions unanswered among them. Why did government think it necessary to threaten farmer Martha Bonita with fines of $15,000 a day? Wow. How was Martha's pitchfork rebellion able to overcome the heavy hand of government? And finally, and most significantly, at least in my mind, does big government want small farms? Well, here to help us grow some answers, we have a couple of people who can really help us out, I think. One is Martha Bonita herself, the Virginia farmer from Paris Barnes at Liberty Farm in Paris, Virginia. Welcome to the Food Chain, Martha.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a real joy.
Yeah, it's a real joy to have you aboard. Tell us about Paris Barnes at Liberty Farm.
We're a small family farm on 64 acres. We produce heirloom tomatoes, vegetables. We have an apiary. We produce raw honey. We also produce hay, herbs, and people come from all over to purchase our eggs. From chickens, ducks, turkeys, and even emus. Have you ever seen an emu egg? They're gorgeous.
Well, yes, I have. They're pretty big, as a matter of fact. But not quite as big as ostrich eggs.
Correct. Yes.
Well, let me ask you this. Who pays the way? You make things and you sell them, I guess. Is that it?
Correct.
You have grants from...
We have alpacas and llamas and sheep, and we shear them. Ah. And we take their shearings, and we... spin them into yarns, we make crafts out of them, that type of thing, and we make them available to the public. One of the greatest joys of my life in pursuing farming has been the wonder and excitement of having children and families come to the farm and experience a small working farm for the first time. It's an extraordinary opportunity to witness just how important our small family farms are to the community.
Well, Miss Martha, did you ever think growing up that you would be following in the footsteps of other famous Virginians like George Washington and Thomas Jefferson to lead a rebellion against an intrusive government?
you know, I grew up in Mount Vernon. I grew up on what we were told growing up was a part of George Washington's vast farmland, in particular his big farms.
Wow.
So, you know, I grew up with my mom always having vegetable gardens, kitchen gardens in the backyard, and from there really grew my dream, my love, and my desire to be a small family farmer. And, you know, I grew up in a family, the youngest of three girls, where we were taught growing up, if you work really hard, you can be anything you want in life. So I never dreamed we would purchase Liberty Farm in beautiful Virginia and Fauquier County in Paris, and we'd start farming, and we'd invest our heart and our love and our passion into farming, and that we would hit obstacle after obstacle in the form of over-regulation, miles and miles and miles of regulation that would be suffocating. Never imagined that would ever happen.
And so here you are, following in the footsteps of those original pioneers, those original rebels against government intrusion. Also with us today, folks, we have attorney Pete Kennedy. He, the president of Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. Pete, welcome to the Food Chain.
Good to be on, Michael.
Good to have you. Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. What on earth is that?
Well, what we try and do is mainly protect the rights of farmers and consumers to engage in direct commerce. It seems like it should be a simple proposition, but like Martha was just saying, it's not as easy as it sounds. There's a lot more demand for products from small farms. More people are going to the farm, buying direct, going to farmers' markets. And the biggest obstacle between small farms and prosperity now is certainly not the lack of demand, it's the regulatory climate. Just so our job is to create as favorable a regulatory climate as possible for our farmer members.
Well, who pays your way, Pete?
We are a grassroots organization. Most of our revenue comes from membership fees and individual private donations. We certainly don't get any government money. We wind up taking different government agencies to court, and we get very little corporate funding as well.
I wouldn't imagine anybody supporting you of those two particular branches of our world. Well, I have my question to you, Pete, is why on earth is it necessary here in the United States of America, the land of the free, the home of the brave, to have a farm-to-consumer legal defense fund?
Just because, like Martha was just alluding to, there's just a ton of red tape. There's so many different agencies that regulate farms at the local level. It could be the zoning board, could be the local department of public health, could be the board of animal control. At the state level, it could be state public health, state department of agriculture, state EPA, state department of labor for someone, say, with a farm intern program, and then at the federal level, you have USDA, FDA, and EPA. So we're there to help try and navigate farmers through the regulatory morass.
Wow. That's kind of like being the little Dutch boy that has his thumb in the dike.
Well, we're more optimistic than that. Just what people like Martha have accomplished in Virginia, same thing is maybe going on in a smaller scale elsewhere. There is progress being made, just easing the regulatory burden, and most of that actually these days seems to be done at the state level.
So the boots on the ground at the state level, or at the county level, as it were, where Martha Bonita at Paris Barnes at Liberty Farm is actually standing up to the local government, who, I guess we're going to get into this because it just blows my mind, apparently does not want Martha Bonita being too active in the business of farming. It sounds like what they want you to do is have a farm with no farm in it.
Correct. Yes. And what Pete Kennedy does from Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund, it not only protects small family farmers and farming that's at the backbone of American prosperity, but it also protects the rights of consumers to have the freedom to choose.
Well, yeah, it seems like there's two ends to that, right? There's a farmer end and there's a consumer end.
Exactly, because, you know, not only should farmers be have the freedom to grow and produce food, but Americans should have the freedom as consumers to choose what food they want access to. And if they want to have fresh, locally produced food from small family farmers, they should have the freedom to do that. The conversation should be as easy as, Martha, I like your heirloom organic tomatoes. How much do they cost? They're $2 a pound. Great. Here's $2. I give them the tomatoes, and that's the end of the story. It shouldn't be so complicated where farmers are essentially farming in fear of when their ability to farm and produce and be viable on the land.
There you go, folks.
Is going to be shut down.
Okay, there you go, folks. That's the question today. Does big government want small farms, small farmers like Martha Bonita? What do you think? Phone numbers today, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Does government, big government, want small farms? We're going to go to Paris, Virginia in a moment and learn all about Martha Bonita's Paris Barnes Farm. Do stay tuned.
Get this. You can earn a 5-, 6-, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
You can be old or young.
Rich or poor.
Married or single.
You can own land outright.
Or lease it year to year.
You can grow small fruits on prairie bench lands.
House plants in coastal valleys.
Flowers on steep wooded hillsides.
Vegetables in the city green belts.
And ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
Get all the help you need to get growing at MetroFarm.com.
Get the complete guide to growing high value specialty crops for the city at MetroFarm.com.
Get experts to look at your land and assess which crops to grow at MetroFarm.com.
Get advice on how to plan and develop your project at MetroFarm.com.
And get news about the business of farming for the city.
Yes, you can earn a 5-, 6-, or even a 7-figure income by farming high-value specialty crops on a small parcel of land in or near the city.
Grow for the money today at MetroFarm.com. That's MetroFarm.com.
When local government discovered farmer Martha Bonita selling vegetables, carving pumpkins, and hosting birthday parties at her farm, its agents tried to shut her down with the threat of $15,000 a day fines. Wait a minute. I must be kidding. Martha, tell me it's not true.
Well, it's heartbreaking, really. But in fact, I did receive a violation notice from my county indicating that I would need a site plan, special exception permit, administrative permit that would cost thousands and thousands of dollars and include full-blown hearings in order to engage in traditional small family farming practices that have taken place since forever and ever. And it's heartbreaking because farmers endure, you know, farming is a profession of hope and faith. I mean, you have to have a lot of hope to be a farmer because, you know, you're already fighting nature. You could have blight, drought, all kinds of other things can affect your ability to produce and be in production. And then in addition to that, there's the fear and threat of the county government, in my case, coming in and issuing violation notice threatening, you know, $15,000 a day, and the stress and heartache and hardship and suffering that my family and I have endured are beyond anything I ever dreamed possible, and it should never happen, especially not on a farm zoned rural agricultural in an agricultural county, in an agricultural district, in a right-to-farm state. And so...
Is that all?
Right. So you know, I think that, you know, farmers, Americans, we have a certain expectation when we buy a parcel of land that's zoned for farming to be able to farm. So imagine how devastating it is to buy a parcel of farmland created and zoned for farming that's been farmed for hundreds of years. Engage in farming and then be told you have to be shut down.
Tell us a little bit about the history of Liberty Farms, because it's been there for all, and it's been in agriculture for
exactly
a long, long time.
Exactly. Indeed, it has. Paris is a rural agricultural farming community. We have more cows than we do humans. The village of Paris has, I believe, about 60 human inhabitants, and it's surrounded by a state park and lots of thousands of acres of farmland. And we enjoy pick-your-owns, wineries, cattle farms, all different types of agricultural, rural agricultural agrarian life around that area.
And what kind of crimes were you engaged in, Martha Bonita?
My zoning administrator found her way to my Facebook page where I had had a birthday party for 8 10-year-old little girls in January. At my farm for one of my dear friend's daughters, and it was in January, so none of the activity really took place outside. It was very cold, and I believe there were some snowflakes in the air. So the little girls had cake, opened up presents, played with baby lamb, helped collect some eggs. There weren't tents or circuses or anything like that. It took place in a barn. What little child doesn't want to have a birthday at a farm and experience that? And it was a beautiful experience, and I felt very grateful to be able to offer that opportunity to those children. And the next thing I know, the county determined it to be an event. They considered it to be along the lines of a commercial event that would require, you know, something that a massive entertainment type event would require, with all of the permitting and site plans and hearings, and thousands of dollars later, I'd be able to have a birthday party for 8 10-year-old little girls.
Pete Kennedy.
On private property, yeah.
On private property that's been zoned for agriculture in an agriculture state with the right to farm village. Yeah. Pete Kennedy, what on earth was Martha Bonita doing that so frightened the government?
I think some of it, Michael, is just about control. They do things like this because they can. They want to show who the boss is, but just so much of this just seems short-sighted. Just that agriculture should be the bedrock of the rural community. I mean, people should be encouraged to grow more food, make the community self-sufficient. So we're just seeing more and more of these cases where, you know, they're mainly zoning cases at the local level, where these local government bodies are making it more and more difficult for farmers to make a living. And it's just... it's really short-sighted. They should be encouraging farming.
Well, now we're getting to the gritty-nitty of this question of government and agriculture. Because when I first heard of this story, I thought, oh, it's just another incident of some government bureaucrat running amok. And then I got to wondering, maybe there is something really deep down here, a built-in animosity of a strong central government and a strong, independent people capable of feeding themselves with their own farms. Maybe there's something in that relationship that just is not going to work no matter what. And maybe one side or another has to give. And that's why I got to so fascinated with farmer Martha Bonita and her Liberty Farm in the state of Virginia, a right-to-farm state, and a farm that's been farming for 100 years. Something really interesting is happening here, folks. Martha Bonita stood up to that government and said no. And so, goodness sakes... Martha, what did you do when you realized that you were in this pickle?
Well, I have to tell you that when Virginians heard about the situation, it was truly visceral. It speaks to everybody's heart, and it does for many reasons. One, the notion that a small family farm was in danger and possibly unable to be viable because of the threat of a local county government coming in and taking such being so overreaching and doing so in such a way that threatened the very viability of small family farming created such an outrage and an uproar and truly a renaissance of Virginians and Americans that said, we love our small family farmers, we want access to small family farm locally produced foods. We had property rights activists engaged. And from their perspective, it was, listen, there's an expectation when you buy rural agricultural farmland, as we talked about, in an agricultural county, zoned for agricultural, in an agricultural district, in a right-to-farm state, there's an expectation from the landowner to be able to farm in peace. And then in addition to that, it's a matter of economic freedom and economic liberty. We hear a lot of talk across the nation about jobs, 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 and here you have small family farmers that are saying, we just want to farm in peace. That's all we ask for, is to farm in peace and to work very hard. Farmers are very self-sufficient people.
Now, wait a minute, Miss Martha Bonita. Are you guilty of being self-sufficient?
Well, you know, I think that there's something to be said for growing your own food. And being stewards of the land and loving the land and producing food that your family can consume and that your local community can consume.
There you go.
The ability to do that is something that is part of the American dream. And so from that perspective, you know, this story is really about the American dream, about the ability to work hard and enjoy the fruit of your labor and to be able to do so by feeding your community and being able to produce and sell. And to be viable means, in this climate, being creative as well. And if that means having carving pumpkins on your property in your pumpkin patch, well, that's about as American as apple pie.
My goodness sakes, it's Martha Bonita, carving pumpkins, having birthday parties, selling tomatoes. What a criminal. What are we going to do with her? Right back. Well, how's this, folks? Farmer Martha Bonita was selling vegetables, carving pumpkins, and having birthday parties on her farm, but the government said no. So how do you fight that? How do you fight government when it says no? Well, Martha picked up her pitchfork and went after those government agents and sent them scurrying to their cubicles. But how did she do that? Martha, what did you do when the government came? I mean, how do you fight City Hall?
Well, it takes a lot of courage, and it takes a lot of faith and hope, and with the help of Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund and others, we worked really hard to come up with legislation that would provide a baseline across the state and protect all farmers and consumers, and guarantee that, you know, small family farmers will have the ability to be able to farm without fear, so that what happened to me couldn't happen to anybody else. Because if it could happen to me, it could happen to anybody. And it took two General Assembly sessions, and I'm extremely grateful for the tireless, unshakable dedication of so many individuals that put together this bipartisan, nonpartisan legislation. A task force was created where stakeholders from the agricultural community that included Farm Bureau, agribusiness, large producers, small producers, the Virginia Association of Counties, the Virginia Department of Agriculture and others came together and worked over several months to hammer out a compromise legislation. And I'm very grateful and thankful that Virginia's 72nd governor signed the bill and it became law on July 1st.
Yay!
But it's only the first step. It doesn't solve all the problems, but it's a first step for us to work on and build
on. It's a first step. Now, in putting together this pitchfork rebellion, You had to get a lot of support from your friends and neighbors and fellow farmers in Virginia, right?
Correct. Yes, and it's
did they pick up their pitchforks too?
They did. There were thousands and thousands of letters written. Petitions were signed, phone calls. Families left their jobs, their responsibilities, their homes, traveled hours to come to the General Assembly, to stand in line, to be heard, to rally, to speak before the General Assembly. The outpouring of support was unbelievable, and it created a dialogue and a conversation amongst thousands of Virginians, not only in the Commonwealth, but across the nation, where the community and Americans are saying, we want access to our small family farms, and we don't want the government coming in and over-regulating them off the land.
Well, Pete
it's
Kennedy,
an honor and a privilege to be a part of that.
Yeah, Pete Kennedy, Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund, you saw this case in Virginia. Why did you take it?
Well, we didn't represent Martha in court in any way. What we did was we just tried to give her whatever support we could on the legislation. It's just a great turnaround. Someone who had some adversity just lit a fire, and Martha was the driving force more than anyone else beside that bill. But just our main reason for supporting it is we advocate for a two-tier system where if someone wants to sell their products direct to the consumer and that producer is not regulated or inspected in any way, that producer should have that consumer and the producer should have the right to do business direct. And what this bill is so far reaching, it not only allows the farmer to sell the products of the farm direct to the consumer without any state or local permitting, but it also allows the farmer to sell the products of neighboring farms at their farm store without any state or local permitting either.
So in doing something like that, farmers in a neighborhood could get together and
you know,
kind of determine who has the best location and cooperate, and you know, everybody could grow something special for that particular location, and you could really develop. That's kind of threatening, don't you think?
Well, what it does, I think, too, is it protects a small producer so that they're not wiped out in the event they run into a hardship. For example, a pumpkin patch. Let's say that there's some sort of devastation to half of the crops, and a farmer loses most of their pumpkin patch. It gives the farmer an opportunity to supplement their harvest with pumpkins from a neighboring farm, so that the farm doesn't lose all of the revenue from the harvest festivities that would occur, around October in the fall, so that they can keep their doors open, so that they can remain viable on the land, and so that they aren't forced off the farm. And so what it does is it's really encouraging an opportunity for farmers to truly be viable and achieve that American dream on the farm, on the small family farm.
Well,
the other thing, Michael, is just most of the money is made in the conventional food system is the middleman makes most of the money. So this, in a sense, allows the farmer to be the middleman. They'll be selling the products of other farms. If you've got the products just under the prior law, just the consumer would have to go to 8 different farms, say, to pick up these products. They can now get them in one farm. So it makes more money for the other farmers, and the farmer who's selling them out of their store gets to be the middleman, in a sense.
Well, yeah, and it kind of makes an untenable situation for small farmers selling directly to consumers. It makes it more tenable. You know, Michael Olson's tongue-in-cheek second law of the food chain is that the farther you go from the source of your food, the less control you have over what's in that food. So if you're, to my notion, it's kind of like what you're saying, Pete, if you're buying food from your neighbor and you can look them in the eye and see what's in the food, who needs the government in that relationship? But if you're like buying organic chicken from China, I'm thinking I want an armed guard following that chicken all the way. And I guess that's what your law is. I mean, it seems like it's really benign and really nice and everything, but I'm thinking you're threatening some very powerful people.
Well, I think one thing, two of the big buzzwords with the food safety people are transparency and traceability. And where do you have that more than buying direct from your local farmer? And I think the other thing is that the safest, there are really two food systems out there. We all know there's the conventional food system and the local food system. And the safest food produced is in the local food system. Just what's preventing more of it from getting out there and getting the consumer more access to it right now is just the regulations the farmers have to work under. And this is just a major step in the right direction.
This is indeed a major step, because now tomato farmer, heirloom tomato farmer Martha Benita, can sell her tomatoes, but she can also sell things from the neighboring farm, some honey, some lettuce, whatever, cucumbers. Mm-hmm. It opens up a whole world for your community to become a place for city people to connect with their farmers. Wow, how revolutionary. Well, when we get back, I'd like to take on the big question of the day, which in my mind is, does big government want small farms? That is what I'd like you to ask at 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Well, folks, it seems to me that there is nobody more free than a farmer growing food for his or her community. What a powerful position to be in, to be the one who's supplying food, good food, food that people drive out to get at your farm. Wow, that's powerful stuff. But how does that square with a great, big, huge central government that always wants more and more and more control over the world? How can you control a farmer who's truly free and independent? Can you? I mean, if you were, think about it for a moment. If you were dictator of the world, would you want the world, would you want your citizens to be free and independent and running around taking care of themselves? Or would you want them dependent on you? And that's kind of the question that comes to mind in watching farmer Martha Bonita struggle for the freedom and independence to be able to grow vegetables, heirloom tomatoes, carve some pumpkins, have some birthday parties for some 10-year-old girls. The government didn't like that. Tried to fine her $15,000 a day. She stood up to them and beat them back. It took two times through the Virginia General Assembly. Somebody there, Martha Bonita, must have been wanting to say no. Who was that?
At the General Assembly?
Yes.
We were surprised. We were very surprised because I was, well, let me just put it this way. I was very surprised because I had always thought that the environmentalists would support 100% protecting the local food shed, protecting locally produced small family farms that are producing sustainable, local, healthy foods for the community. Because in doing so, they're keeping the farm in agriculture. They're protecting the agrarian way of life. And we were stunned and heartbroken to determine that, and discover that they, in fact, were adamantly opposed to this legislation that would encourage more small family farmers. You know, the average small family farmer is around 65 years old, I believe, in Virginia. And, you know, we need to be attracting younger producers.
You don't sound 65.
Well, no, I'm not. But I understand the seriousness of, you know, bringing younger people into farming and agriculture and how important that is. And in order to do so, it has to be an environment that's welcoming and brings about the enthusiasm that comes with starting a small family farm, which is very difficult. It's physically difficult. It's expensive. And you often don't reap the rewards until sometime in the future. And this bill really has untold opportunity, and we're hoping to see that in the months and years to come.
Well, I don't understand. Why would the environmental community be against this bill? I mean, it would seem like this bill would populate the country with people who are adamantly fixed on tending the land. I mean,
exactly. That's exactly correct, and that's why it was rather shocking to learn that they were some of the largest individuals, groups against this legislation that protects the rural agricultural integrity of the local ability to provide and source from small family farming community.
Wow. That's so it was the environmentalists standing up against you. Pete, is this something we see across the country, or is that something just unique to Martha's Virginia farm there?
Well, I think you're seeing it out in California right now with the Drake's Bay Oyster Company. I mean, that estuary they oyster farm in, I think, has some of the cleanest water in California. And it's really surprising to see some of the environmental groups want such great stewards of the area out. So I think...
Well, do they want anybody in? Or is it that just that they want...
Yeah, and that's the question. You've got in this, with Drake's Bay, you've got... this one firm that's responsible for around a third of the entire oyster production in California. You're only going to make that up through imports. So it's just
Good. Let me get this straight. We get rid of the best oysters in the world from the cleanest waters in the world so that we can eat oysters from China, right? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, I think in this case it's South Korea, but that's right. Yeah. So just what was... great about Virginia, thanks to Martha and other farmers like Joel Saladin, was they put this coalition together that includes some of the groups that lobby for big agriculture, like Farm Bureau and the Agribusiness Council. And really, the opposition here was the environmental groups and then the Virginia Association of Counties that was trying to protect their own nest.
So a coalition of government and environmental groups. I might have figured that rascal Joel Saladin would have a hand in this rebellion. So, goodness sakes, the environmentalists, the governments versus the family farmer. We're going to take our last break here. When we come back, we'll have a few minutes, but I'd like to, if possible, come to grips with the question of big government and small farms. Martha Bonita just won a major victory with the help of Pete Kennedy and the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. But something tells me the fight is just beginning. And if people don't fight, we're going to lose the right to produce our own food. Or maybe I'm just over the top here. What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson with Martha Bonita, Pete Kennedy, and you. Do stay tuned. Well, folks, here's a little tip that I would like to relate. If you control access to your food, you can control your life. But if somebody else controls access, your access to food, then they control your life. Now, it seems like you don't have to go very far back in history to see where this notion of mine is borne out in some incredible tragedies of human history. And I'd like to point out a couple of them where it was a contest between the free will of citizens and the control of government and the contention between those two. The first case being Joseph Stalin's Holodomor, in which the Ukrainian farmers were misbehaving and not towing the government line. And so Joseph Stalin simply starved 12 million Ukrainian farmers to death because they weren't behaving. But that's nothing compared to Chairman Mao and his great leap forward, in which somewhere, according to Frank Decoder, 45 to 60 million Chinese farmers were starved to death because they weren't towing the government line. So there is this inherent conflict, it seems to me, between a government that wants ever more control of its world and a people who want more freedom. And where is that borne out more than the fight over the ability of individual people to farm food for their community? So it seems to me, looking down the line, that this is fight from Martha Bonita is the beginning of a long fight Pete Kennedy. Am I wrong?
I think you're right. I think control over someone's food choices or ability to access food is the ultimate control. I think the good news is this issue crosses party and ideological lines more than any other issue. I just you saw the coalition Martha put together. I think there's going to be more success at the legislative level, especially in the state houses. And I also think that everyone believes, unless I guess you work for the public health department, that you have the right to obtain the food of your choice from the source of your choice. So what the government might consider to be civil disobedience, the average citizen thinks is perfectly within their rights. So hopefully this is just, like you said, the start of more of the same.
So Martha Bonita, farmer at Freedom Farms there in Paris, Virginia. You truly are following in the footsteps of George Washington, are you not? Wow.
Well, I think that it speaks to America's passion for locally small farm produced goods, and particularly in Virginia, which is where it all started. And it's been a real honor and a privilege, and I feel very grateful for Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund, for the thousands of people that rallied to get behind this legislation and were determined and unshakable to see it through, and the opportunity this gives so many people. It's just been a real blessing for us to experience and be a part
of. Martha Bonita, she picked up her pitchfork and sent them government agents scurrying for the cubicles. Martha Bonita, thank you for joining us. Wow.
Thank you.
Pete Kennedy, thank you for joining us. What fun. And thank you all for tuning in. Remember Michael Olson's second law of the food chain. The farther you go from the source of your food, the less control you have over what's in that food and what's in your life. Thank you for tuning in.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.